Good morning, good afternoon, or the edifice of the stroke of midnight, but we'll go with the afternoon. I look at a lot of horror comics in the 1950s. I've never seen anything that's so scary as the faces I'm looking at right now. But we'll forge ahead fearlessly. And I'm fearless because I'm this character here, Forlock the Warlock, comic books of the 1950s. And beyond, many of them had horror hosts, which were based on the horror hosts of old radio shows that told our great-grandfathers spooky stories. Comic books came into prominence in horror comics in the 1950s. There was a precedence in the 40s, but they really got rolling in the 1950s. And I do a line of horror comic reprints called Haunted Horror, and I'm one of the three hosts there, and that's me. Me pictured by a great artist of EC and Mad named Angela Torres. So, I want to begin by saying comic books of the 1950s and a few precious number before and since are harmful to impressionable minds. They're crudely drawn, they're luridly printed, sexually charged, and they encourage criminal activity. They are pure, disgusting filth.
Great, where did we get some?
That's what I say. Oh, how I love them. Serendipitously getting a hold of this contraband in my youth eventually made me unable to function in the normal world. Filled my mind with base thoughts, made me unfit for decent society. Oh, how grateful I am for comic books. A hell-bent critic of the 1950s once called comic books the marijuana of the nursery. But every comic book publisher, editor, writer, and artist who was responsible for this nefarious narcotic for innocent infants, I would like to say, God damn, this is the good stuff. Thank you, pusher man. Turn on. Comic books of the 1950s were reviled, even burned by uptight blue noses, politicos shamefully trolling for votes, and holier than thou and me, religious groups. The worst of the worst, the evil we call mothers, destroyed the few surviving comic books that were hidden under mattresses by their unsuspecting comic book loving children off at college sit-ins in the 60s. I am now attempting to gloriously reprint these fantastic, soul-destroying rare comic books in their proper printed form. Enemies of the good stuff now battle this righteous cause with new tactics by closing bookstores, pimping e-readers, and, in an act of nefarious subterfuge, selling the public on the idea that the GMO of comics, superheroes, are something more than true, repugnant bile. No amens on that one? Amen. So, brothers and sisters, I will not be thwarted in my mission from God to resurrect the horror, crime, and twisted animation style in my books of the past. I promise you I will not rest until we can get that wondrous weed for the weak ones into the grateful, sweaty, tiny meat hooks of potential juvenile delinquents. These JDs, these teenage hopped-up hoodlums, can ultimately, like my unrepentant, retrobate self, gloriously blossom into comic book career criminals. Can I hear a loud amen? I said, can I hear a loud amen? All right. So now I want to show you, now that you're pumped and primed, and if you aren't already corrupted, but you think you might want to be a JD, you think you might want to have a reprobate mind, I'm going to show you some highlights from these four comic books. So we're going to have a few seconds here that we're going to allow anyone to leave that wants to live their lily clean, wholesome life and not be corrupted by these comic books. But we're not going to judge you. Get up now and please file out. All right, you have been warned. This is not another portrait of me, but this by some irate do-gooder. But this is the cover of a horrific comic. If ever a comic book was more aptly titled, it's this one. And it's drawn by a man named Don Heck, who probably went to hell for drawing this. But it's going to be inspiration for many for my line of books as far as a big head on the cover that's horrible looking, and so I like to steal because I am a juvenile delinquent. I like to steal in my design choices for my books, and I stole the idea for the big heads on my books from this particular comic book. I've never owned this comic book until Alan, my friend, will testify. He found this comic book. That a dealer had just bought for $20 from some other dealer because it was in such bad shape. I think Dr. Frederick Worthman maybe peed on it or something in the 1950s and then threw it in the fire and somebody rescued it. It was in that kind of shape. The dealer called it near mint. So I finally got a copy of this comic book thanks to my friend Alan, who helps on our books, and I couldn't do it all without him and my partner Cleese or something. The next cover is the predecessor of Marvel Comics was called Atlas in their earlier days, and they had many great four comics during the 50s craze, and one of them was called Astonishing Discoveries by Joe Manili, who tragically died on a New York subway, fell in front of a subway car, and so he died in his late 30s, so he was a great artisan of both humor and a lot of horror comic books for Stan Lee. And this is one of the great covers he did. I love this. Can you imagine going to the candy shop in the 1950s? And you would not be able to resist this comic cover for sure. This guy's quite melting, so you know, I see some people with skin problems walking around looking like this, or maybe they're in costume at this convention. But here's the origins of all that. Dr. Frederick Worthman, who was the main comics critic of the late 40s and early 50s, and eventually influenced the public and the Senate and religious groups to come out against comic books to where there was eventually a comics code. We'll get into him a little bit more. He called this the injury to the eye motif. That the psychiatrist identified in a lot of comic books, and this is certainly one of the some people would say the worst examples, or some of us might say one of the best examples. Sometimes horror, especially horror in the 50s, because it became such a craze that you even see horror in every other kind of mixing with other genres. Like here's one with science fiction, which was maybe a close genre, but it also seemed like Lulu would start have covers with ghosts on them, and Donald Duck would have scary covers, everybody was kind of trying to tap into this vast interest in horror comics. So this is kind of a combination of science fiction and horror. And this is a DC comic book. They had early in the game, in the 40s, with Superman, got a lot of criticism. Before Superman, they used to publish what we think is kind of mild porn, but porny-type magazines you had to buy under the counter. So they were very sensitive. And once they got Superman going and saw all the money they made from that, they would try to be wholesome. So this is kind of as horrible as DC got. But I love the cover, and it was actually kind of, the idea was stolen from Speaking of Sealy, stolen from an old pulp magazine. Frank Frazetta drew this with another artist named Sid Sheck, a great zombie cutter here. Showing you some more here. This is a favorite cover of mine, Starling Terror Tales. Isn't that great? It's by a great artist named Elton Cole, who I think someone else is working on a book about. EC was probably the greatest horror publisher and got the most criticism. They had really grisly covers and stories and shocking kinds of things. And here's me on the West Side Highway coming down from the next day. Once you get into horror comics, you'll find that women who wore red, blonde haired women who wore red, were invariably grabbed by monsters. So I really suggest, and especially in graveyards and things like that, this is a woman typically not in a graveyard, but I suggest if you're ever going into a, if you're a blonde haired woman, never go into a graveyard and don't like wearing a red dress. So you're just asking for it. Here's a comic book writer, maybe, self-portrait. This was by an artist named Bernard Bailey, who I'm told was kind of ashamed of what he did back in the day. He's gone now himself. But and this is an obscure artist named Matt Fox. Great name and great artist. And another epic name, comic book, Chilling Tales, Weird Worlds. This octopus to me is kind of wearing a Nazi helmet, which makes him even more scary. Here's another example of a different genre. B-Bar Riders was a Western comic, but they felt, let's forget the horses and cowboy shoot-em-ups and let's get into the horror craze. Even the cowboy cops will get into it. I love this cover, another big head cover. This is by Lee Elias. And this is the code that I was talking about that was finally, when there was a crackdown against comic books, the publishers, in order to save their sorry asses from the industry being completely destroyed, which probably 80% of it was decimated by other criticism, but a few remaining people started a comics code. This wasn't outside censorship, it was self-censorship. It was under pressure so that they wouldn't be taken totally off the newsstands and out of the candy stores. This is the symbol that we hate now, the comics code of order. So there's this gentleman, Dr. Frederick Wortham, and some people see him as a force for good, and he did do good things. He started a clinic in Harlem where people could come for psychiatric counseling, which was kind of a new field of, on a broad base, and he charged people a quarter if they could afford it. He thought they should pay something, and he helped a lot of poor people with their psychiatric needs. Or was Dr. Frederick, was he really a Hitler? He didn't have his bad side. And this book that he wrote, Seduction and Innocence, certainly created a lot of anti-comics hysteria and created this initial repression of comics and this pressured self-censorship. And in the book, he had a gallery in the middle of it, pictures he really objected to. It gave you an idea of what he found disdainful. This is a very famous cover by one of the few black artists of the 50s in comics, Matt Baker. And this is this character's fame and label that DC now owns the rights to. But they're not doing any covers even to this day that match the greatness of Matt Baker. And Wortham said under the passion, when he put this in his book, he said, children call these headlight comics. I don't quite get what he's referring to. Maybe some of you take his side and explain. And his caption for this was, "Children told me what the man was going to do with a red-hot poker." I mean, you know, we're having fun here today, and we wish comics weren't censored. I've been perfectly happy with the rating system like they did for movies, but they were in the hands primarily of kids at this point in the 50s. In the 40s, probably half the people that bought them, or more than half, were adult servicemen overseas fighting Hitler's people in the world could have freedom of the press. But by the 50s, the main audience for comics was kids. And I've had six kids at least. I've taught it six. I don't know how many really in total out there, but six of them forward and identified himself as me as their father. So I really want my young kids to, or older kids, maybe to read stories like this. So I think Wortham had his points, but I do think Jeff Reading Press and adults should be able to decide what they want to read, and publishers should decide themselves what they want to publish. This is another panel Wortham found very objectionable. Artists found the pose here of the lady very interesting. I've seen this pose traced and copied in subsequent comic books by other artists and other publishers, you know, dozens of times. I thought it was a great artist, thought it was a great pose. Here's that injury to the eye motif again, friends. This is by Jack Cole, the creator of Plastic Man. And we just are grading a book this week up at our table, which is number 588. I said 588. Can I hear an amen, brothers and sisters, for table 588? All right. You'll see the Jack Cole book there, and he was the creator of Plastic Man, and he also drew Crime Stories, which is actually from a crime comic, and he also then drew Horror Stories, the last work of his life, and in comic books. And that book that you'll see over there is a collection of his work. He unfortunately had his own inner demons, which you can kind of see reflected in his horror work. And he took his own life shortly after drawing these horror comic books. There's another thing that Wortham objected to. It's Batman and Robin. I don't know, this is a spoiler alert. I don't know if all of you know that Batman actually reality of Bruce Wayne. And Robin is Dick Grace. I hope I haven't...
the Dickens, you say.
You know, just really to mess up your fanboy and fanboy life. But Wortham thought there was another secret that they had in their life, that they were homosexuals. And this is a panel with an example of what Wortham's worst fear. Batman, Bruce Wayne, says, "Ah, that's a good secret. Come on, Dick." So many of the boy assistants to superheroes were named Dick. I don't know, it's just a popular name, apparently, for boy assistants. Who knows why? Come on, Dick. A cold shower. Carefully unwrap the soap in the shower. And a big breakfast. And then down to the Batcave to repair the Batmobile. I'm way ahead of you. Working in my This cover was actually shown before a Senate investigative committee, and they asked the publisher, William Gaines, who was also the publisher of Mad, but a whole line of horror comics. They said, "Don't you find this cover objectionable, Mr. Gaines?" said one Senate pointedly, and Gaines, he really didn't do his testimonies, and his answer was, as far as winning points for himself. He said if he thought it wasn't objectionable at all, but it might be if the artist had drawn it so the head was raised up a little higher where you could see the bleeding neck. So that didn't go over too good with the senators. And this was part of that Senate investigation I'm talking to you about. Representative comic book covers, crime, or any weird variety. Weird kind of cover, you know, covers a lot. You know? So, was reading comics a happy, wholesome thing that kids should do, and it was just fine, and
causing young minds to be corrupted? Or should comic books be burned? As they were, as you see in this scene, it could have been out of Nazi Germany. It's a sobering thought. So here's some of the books that we've done collecting these old horror stories. So the one on your left is by Dick Griever, and he did the Frankenstein monster.
That led off our collection of horror comics, and it's not only a book, but if you came without a costume at the convention, come to booth 588. Can I hear an amen?
Amen.
And you buy the book, and you'll have a mask too at the same time. So you'll be so Trey cool at the con. And so that led off our line. Then we followed out with Bob House Terror. He was a great, great artist and kind of unknown, but we like to dig up old artists and present their work anew. And so I came by, they go, at booth 588. And yesterday I said, I get it, you guys do old school. So that's our motto now, we do old school. And so Bob Howe was one of the great old school, but kind of unknown back then and unknown now, but we're trying to dig him up and give him another life. Because zombies are so popular, because we dig them as much as you do, we also do a whole book of zombies. Designer of the book, I did want to always do big heads, I thought, but we had just this great zombie image that I kind of had, veered to the left a little bit, and to me this is like a romance comic book gone wrong or something. It's really wonderful. And then there's that Jack Holes Deadly Horror book I was telling you about. I love that cover. Does it look like anybody you know? In the horror line, we just also did these comic books. At the same time, Steve Ditko was drawing Spider-Man and Doctor Strange for another little company out of Derby, Connecticut. He was drawing these monster comics. Gorgo, who also had a film career, and Kong are the same. He did tons of stories with these great characters. And so the work was wonderful. It's never been reprinted. So we were proud to do that. The comic just came out. It's the thickest book we've done, so I just think it could be a lot of comics. Here's another comic book that it was kind of like horror. The Strange World of Your Dreams by the Simon Kirby Shop, Joe Simon, Jack Kirby, and it was like supposedly interpretations of people's dreams. And people, as you know, especially if you eat pizza just before going to bed, we often have nightmares, and so they are often illustrated in their illustrated people's dreams, like these nightmarish kind of dreams, which this first cover from that series represents. I love playing with the design stuff. I used to be a toy inventor, so I kind of try to make my books kind of almost like toys, like that mask. And this one is actually kind of printed on an old mattress type fabric, and it's cushy, pillow-like, so you can actually put this under your head and sleep on it and have dreams like this, all for just a few books at booth 588. So comics about cartoonists, we kind of have a horror cover here, and there's a bunch of horrors and stories inside, but there's every kind of story. Because cartoonists would run out of ideas, so then they would draw stories about just their cartooning profession. It's my favorite book I've ever done or will ever do. So if you haven't looked at it, I hope you look at it, because it's just so much fun, this meta kind of stories to fill up a great book, and you get a lot of fun putting it together. And then we're doing a line of horror comic books for IDW, one of our main publishers, and they're floppy style comic books. You can fold them, keep them in plastic bags, or put them in little plastic, between hard pieces of plastic. You actually fold them up, put them in your pocket, throw them in your basket or your bicycle, you read them under the covers at night with a flashlight, and you meet, more comic books like they were really meant to be enjoyed, not in these precious hardcover things on a library shelf, but actually, meet while you're eating your greasy pizza and not worry about it. It's a real old school floppy comic book. And this cover on the left is kind of a famous image. It was used on the punk bands, the Misfits. They used it on the cover of one of their early outputs. And it's, again, another great cover by Neil Elias, who I mentioned earlier. And the cover on the right is, it's kind of a collage. They took this girl from one artist and the zombies from an artist named Basil Wolverton, and the witch from a picture of my mother-in-law, and they made this collage cover. Again, we have the theme of bondage, which Rickman was so upset about, and another weird cover by Bernard Bailey on the right. Actually, he seemed to have a thing for ants. Oh, that's, you know, before the ants were falling into the guy's mouth, they obviously ate him, then got a human head on their bodies, and now they're crawling out. That's going to be a nightmare. A couple more covers. Here's on the right is another one of our horror hosts. That's Mr. Carswell. And he has a blog called The Horrors of It All, where he shows nearly every day what's going on. Horror story from the 1950s. It's a great plot. Remember that other cover where the guy's face was kind of melting? This is by the same artist. Again, Lee Elias. And then on the right, another Bernard Bailey cover. We love this stuff. Brain surgery gone wrong. The next issue coming out is number 9. That's the picture on the left. And the issue following that, number 10, is going to be a cover by L.D. Cole, which he was very influenced by posters. You know, in fact, both of these covers kind of differ from the normal comic book. The one on the left was by Norman Saunders, who was a pulp artist, so he did it in a hand relief style. The one on the right is by L.D. Cole, who was inspired by posters of the 1930s and 40s with their pure, simple colors and bold outlines. And he did these really striking covers, which I really love. And, you know, the colors are kind of different, deeper red or blue or yellow, and it's just a great cover. And I thought I'd show you some of my favorite splash pages from this series of comic books. The groping ghost. If you have to be groped, I guess it's something that's not actual physical, is probably the best to be groped by, but it's still a little. It's still improper touching, let's face it. This is by an artist named Luke Cameron, who did very innovative layouts and the way he told the stories. I love this work. We're going to do a whole collection of his down the line. This publisher actually they kind of had the worst artists. Anatomically, they weren't so correct. They did have those headlights, the doctor working with Mike, but I kind of like them in their funkiness. You know, they weren't the great EC artists like Wally Wood or Graham Ingalls or Jack Davis, but they're more the really also Rams. But I like their spirit. Her lips drip blood. Skin Them Alive. Football team that uses a human head for the football. Actually, in high school, the football team used to use my head as a football. But, you know, us nerds, we eventually won out, right? Yay! Stream Up. I used to be the creative director of the Muppets, working with Jim Henson. So I love to collect puppet stories. This is one of my favorites. Stream Up. Who shall inherit the earth? The Fate of Alberto. Look at that great art. Kind of looks like Renaissance kind of etchings or something like that. By kind of an unknown artist. The Unsleeping Dead. There was lots of zombie stories. There's another Luke Cameron. Isn't that panel, the lower right panel, kind of very atmospheric? It really is pretty spooky. Doom Smoke. The Constant Eye. I love that. Is that a great splash page? Terror on TV. Today should be Terror on Facebook. The Wage Earners. Here's me with the new Jack Holbrook. And here's some splash pages from that Jack Holbrook. You can tell Jack Holbrook. possibility and an angst, just like the way he drew these last stories before his demise by his own hand. You can tell it's just kind of crazy. The orgy. It's that the orgy of death. Death prowls the streets. Look at that.
Actually, on the insides of the covers, we, for the end papers, we use these big heads too, so we used, I thought we used that guy's head. Is that that guy? No, it's a different guy. Oh, well. Forget that point.
Oh, wrong one. Pack of the Devil. Man who died twice. And we're going to have a contest this month. I'm announcing it first. This month can win all these books and the Ditko Monster books just by giving your name on Facebook. So go to the Yale Books page on Facebook, like the page, and we'll give the contest details there. Ultimately, you're just going to have to put your name on that page. And in the comments section, we're going to draw the names from there, and we're going to send some lucky juvenile delinquent a complete set of all our books for Christmas. And that will announce the winner on Halloween. So, I want to take any questions about horror comics or what we do, or your own personal angst, if you want to share them. You, sir. It takes a lot of research, and you have to there and read up on it, and you know, you have to do research. It's kind of tricky, because some of it's kind of muddy. But there is stuff that's public domain that's built into our copyright law. We, the public, own this. Anybody, some of the material we print, anybody can reprint that, because it belongs to us, the public, including the artists. They can reprint it. The old publishers can reprint it, or we, the members of the public, can reprint it. Other things are protected, and we need to respect that and not share. Yes, sir. There goes the one right here.
How do you think the political and social atmosphere of the 50s affected the kinds of stories that were being told?
Good, I'm sorry, could you be a little louder?
How do you think the social and the kind of political atmosphere of the 50s affected the stories that were coming out in comic books?
Well, you know, it was after the war, and I think people were kind of trying to... The people of America in our government era are trying to find themselves, and there was the post-war paranoia of you know, Russia starting to be feared, and so I think some of those fears played into the idea of war. And in fact, there are a lot of war stories kind of relating to atomic bombs or something gone wrong. And so I think, you know, the 50s wasn't just happy days. You know, there was a time of angst and fear and fear of the future and things like that. So I think that played into the comics and their popularity. Comic books, when Superman started, superheroes did just reign. It started off big, and then it got really big when the war came on, because we needed superheroes to fight the Nazis. And comic books were selling a lot in army PX, just the young men overseas, you know, fighting the Nazis. That missed the home, and they needed that sphere of bravado of Superman. But when the war ended, superheroes really fell by the wayside, and they needed a new kind of genres to interest kids, and so they came up with the war. Again, probably stolen from there was scary radio shows that people used to watch, and I think they stole the idea from that. And they were trying everything. They were trying romance, there's all kinds of weird genres. And cowboy stories, and there were all kinds of weird genres after the superheroes died out. And war just really took off. And crime. Wortham was fighting more against crime comics. He didn't like superhero comics. They were fascist. He didn't like horror comics because he thought they were too grisly. He didn't like comics and sex and community eye motifs. But he really hated crime comics. He didn't think they caused too much harm. Thought they were, yeah, what's the cost for that? I don't know if that answers your question. How much time do I have? I don't know if Gage is anyone else? Peter's another fellow that really helps us a lot in our books. He's an editor, proofreader. Yes, ma'am?
You have 15 minutes.
15 minutes? Okay. So, more questions. Oh, no, please, more questions now. Yes, certainly, the good looking man. Why are all the good looking people on that side of the room? Is this some kind of segregation?
No.
yeah, you're right. You moved to that side. Okay. Yes, sir. Yes.
Do you have any interest in publishing the horror comics from the 70s, like the Skywall?
We're going to be publishing company called Erie Publications that did, I think, Tomb of Terror stuff. In fact, probably more than half their stories, they would take old 50s stories that were in public domain, or that maybe the publisher Stanley Morse originally had published in the 40s. He would take those old stories, and then as grisly as they were, he would have artists like Dick Ayers and Chick Stone make them even more grisly, even more gruesome. Much more blood. There was a lot of flowing of blood and heads being severed and stuff. So you take like an already bad horror story and then make it badder. Is that a word, Peter?
Yes.
Okay. He made him worser. Peter?
No.
Didn't make him worser. He made him badder. Michael Hallett has written a book of the history of the company, and he's done another book that's an index of the company, but there's never been like a really good colored book a good hardback book collecting the best stories. So that's what we're going to be doing next year. Michael Hallett's finishing that up now. And that's going to be a great book. It's going to be very popular because there's a lot of interest in those four comics of the 70s. There was also Creepy Neary. Like, Stanley Morse was like kind of a poor man's Creepy Neary. Creepy Neary had the old ECR that's resurrected and doing great stuff, brilliant stuff, reading Crandall and Al Williamson and Jack Davis, I think, did stories, and Steve Ditko did new stories. And they were great, but Stanley Moore said, like, hey, this Jim Moore guy's making a lot of money. I'm just going to reprint my old stories, but make it even worse. And so kids ate that up with a spoon. They ate it up with a spoon. And so we're going to be doing a big reprint of those. I'm excited about that. The artwork's kind of incredible in some ways. Not in a gooder way. Good?
No.
No. He's my grammar Nazi. Okay, so another question. We'll take one from the other side. Yes, ma'am.
Are these stories before or after the censorship in 1950s?
These are before. Yeah, these books collected. The next issue is going to be a compilation of all the Fabi comics called Haunted. The title of the book's Haunted Horror, but the subtitle is Banned Comics of the 50s. It's kind of a misnomer because they weren't actually banned. I mean, they were heavily criticized. And then, like I said, eventually the publishers banded together, the few that were remaining after there was so much criticism, and newsstands stopping to carry comics and stuff. And they self-censored through this Comics Code Authority. But all these stories are before that censorship. And sometimes the publishers, after the code, would reprint some of their old stories, and they would doctor them up, in favor of Dr. Workman's viewpoints, and they would paint over some of the more grisly scenes or switch the balloons around. There was Western comic books that were reprinted, had the cowboys shooting the Indians, except they in the reprint after the code, they would paint out the guns. So like pointing fingers, like we did as little kids, bang bang, you know. Yeah, like the Indians would be pulling a bow and arrow and shooting it, but there was no arrow in the bow, it was just a bow. So some of the stories became kind of ridiculous when they were reprinted post code. But all our stories are pre code. Can you say pre code? 1, 2, 3. Pre code. Sounds cool, right? Yes, sir. Your second question, you get 3 today, sir. I mean, everyone on the other side will get 3. You guys can have as many questions as you want. Yes, sir.
Do you know, well, exactly who has the rights to doing the Simon and Kirby Black Magic stories?
I think those are primarily public domain, but Joe Simon has a very active estate that I will tell you that frowns on this idea, I've tried to work with him to be respectful, and I think people should do that if they're reprinting that material.
And just one other question: how do you compare Lev Gleason, William Gaines, their impact on the field? Really?
What's the question, please? That's your fourth question, sir?
How would you compare Lev Gleason to William Gaines and their impact on the comics industry?
Oh, as publishers, the men, Lev Gleason and William Gaines, how do I judge their impact?
Lots of the time thought that Gleason could somewhat set the standard for basically the horror host, well, the crime host, really, in the case of commentator
of
stories and policy.
Yeah. Well, both these guys were powerful men in the comic book industry. Lee Gleason is talking about published. Did he publish Crime Does Not Pay, right?
Yes.
interesting because there was this title that Wortham hated called Crime Does Not Pay. And when the comic books start off in giant letters, it said, CRIME! At the top. And then in little letters, it says, Does Not Pay. And so it gets interested in crime. You know, like, whoa, this is cool. And as the criticism raised, the word crime became smaller and does not pay became bigger. And they actually had like five or six logos throughout their history where crime was shrinking and does not pay was getting bigger. And they were selling millions of copies of these crime comic books. And they're interesting comic books. I find the artwork kind of dull. I think the most interesting thing about it is how the logos shrinking and expand to precise crime or does not pay. There was also one of their editors was Bob Wood, who, and you know, he even got his name on the cover, edited by Charles Biro and Bob Wood. Bob Wood was an interesting guy because he didn't read the does not pay line on the cover. He only read the crime part himself, took that into his personal life. And he went to prison after bludgeoning his paramour with a whiskey bottle in a hotel room for 3 or 4 days and killing her. And he went to prison, and then he got out and got into some kind of liaison with the mob and got in trouble with them and got pushed out of the bar. So he should have been reading the does not pay aspect rather than the crime aspect. That was Bob Wood. Well, let's take something from the pretty side of the game. Yes, sir. Oh, yeah. And the prettiest, do you want to stand up, sir?
Thank you.
Whoa.
Do you think there'd be maybe enough interest for, like, a Wally Wood book?
Well, there's been many Wally Wood collections. I think everything has been reprinted 3 or 4 times. He's one of my favorite artists. When better drawings are drawn, they'll be drawn by Wood. He's a real Don Cat. Is that what it says? Something like that. So that was in the Bible, one of his drawings. Better drawings are drawn, will be drawn by Wood. He's a real Don Cat. Something like that. I love Wally Wood. He's one of my favorite. Another fellow who shot himself in the head. A lot of suicides in the cartoons, a lot of alcoholism, a lot of Bob Wood bludgeoning his girlfriend. It's not a pretty scene. And one of the, as you'll see even in my book, Comics About Cartoonists, the cartoonists, they don't necessarily lead happy lives. I mean, it's kind of sad, right? I love it being on a sad note. How much time do I have, Cam? What's that say? 5 minutes. Okay. Come on, you guys. Be kind. I know you're the cool, pretty people, but can we take another one from the ugly side? Okay, you said, oh my god.
I just want to make a comment. We ugly people have to do something, you know?
Yeah, sure. Okay.
We're bludgeoning people.
Yeah, all right. There you go. Good comment. Well said. Okay.
Would there be an optimistic way to end this?
Sir, can you be louder?
Would there be an optimistic note in the panel?
Oh, how would there be an optimistic way? Brothers and sisters, booth 588. How's that? Way back in that second room, based on, it's like a library. You can just come look at the book, talk to us more. And if you want to buy it, that'd be great. If not, we'd love to just meet and talk with you more. Take care. And you guys, be nice to these people that are harmed by it. Let's all come together. And maybe you guys can get some beauty tips from this side. And but please, some sympathy. Let us give a hand for them, some sympathy. Sir, you had it 15 minutes.
I just wanted to say, I have a bunch of bottles out in the back. I just need some email information from those people.
Oh, okay. Good point. Thank you all. I really appreciate you coming out. And go to, I want you all to win the books. Go to the Yoga Books page on Facebook and like us. We also have a website where you can see all our books called yogabooks.com. It's that simple. And
thank you again for coming.